Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome in to the Fog.net podcast. My name is Michael Swain, the Kansas beat writer for 24/7 Sports. Very excited about the podcast we have coming your way today. We are joined by Chris Anderson, who covers West Virginia for 24/7 Sports. We're going to break down West Virginia's matchup with KU football this Saturday. Kickoff time is set for 5 p.m. Central. It will be televised on ESPN Plus and Big 12 Now. But Chris, for you, how's the start of your week been so far?
Not bad. When you got that Thursday game, you actually still get a whole weekend in this job. So my season started, but my weekends have not been thrown off yet.
Yep. We had a similar thing with KU playing on Friday. And yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed waking up Saturday and doing some game day and watching some of those other games. So, Chris, I want to start here. For folks that maybe didn't know, West Virginia played Pitt last Thursday in the return of the Backyard Brawl, which is kind of the marquee rivalry game for West Virginia, the equivalent of, you know, the border showdown for Kansas fans. West Virginia lost 38-31. They led by a touchdown there with under 5 minutes to go. And then two consecutive scores from Pitt ended the game. And Chris, I'm curious for you, what's the vibe like in Morgantown right now, considering, you know, the return of a really big rivalry game, one that West Virginia was in a position to win. So what's kind of the atmosphere been like around the team so far?
Well, there's a lot of emotions between the team, the coaches, the fans, with everything that went on with this game, because this rivalry had been off for a few years. So to get it back kind of brought back that, yeah, we hate this team. And, you know, this is why we like college football, because you sports hate these other teams. And that was back. And I think fans enjoyed that. It was an amazing atmosphere. But then, of course, you lose. That feels terrible. It hits as hard as it does, or maybe worse, had they won the game, just in the opposite direction. And at the same time, the way they lost. You know, West Virginia played really well. And they're playing a Pitt team that was ranked 17th at the time. They're moving the ball. They're scoring. They were up 31-24 with, like you said, about 6 minutes left. That was when the fourth and about a foot, West Virginia decided to punt. Pitt came back down and scored 92 yards. And then West Virginia was moving into position for what would have been the game-winning field goal or touchdown. Ball popped right out of a wide-open receiver's hands, right into a Pitt DB's hands, who returns at 53 yards for a touchdown. So just a brutal way to lose it. But fans are, I think now that they've had 72 to 96 hours, have kind of realized, hey, that's a pretty good team. And maybe West Virginia is a pretty good team. So I think we're moving whatever the five stages of grief are for college football. We're moving a couple stages and about to move forward.
Definitely. And I want to ask about some of the trenches stuff, because I think for me, that was like the most fascinating part of watching that game. But for you, in terms of the preseason expectations for West Virginia, I guess, what did you expect going into the game? And what do you feel like you learned about the West Virginia team? I guess getting to watch them kind of go to battle with, like you said, a ranked Pitt team that I think is better than maybe people expect from the outside.
It's funny, because a lot of the things that I thought West Virginia could do well, they did. You know, they got JT Daniels, the former five-star transfer quarterback. Probably the best arm talent West Virginia's had since Will Grier. You know, the stats, you're going to look at the stats and say, was he 23 of 39 for two something? You're going to think that's not very good. Mm-hmm. But he got pressured, I think it was 18 times, 20 times, whatever it was. He had guys in his face all day, still made amazing throws. According to PFF, West Virginia had five drops. The receivers did. Neil Brown said it was six. So you add those in, and at least three of those were deep balls. You know, they're all these ifs, ands, and all that stuff. But you saw what you wanted to see from Daniels. So I knew that was going to be good. You saw a couple plays from receiver. West Virginia's defensive line is good. Speed at linebacker. But then the two big things that were trouble. West Virginia's offensive line. Again, Pitt's defensive line is great, mm-hmm. really great. All-American coming back, an all-ACC player coming back. But then I think my biggest concern after watching this game was West Virginia's secondary. Not just really in the coverage, but the tackling ability, because plays that were 5 yards turned into 20 and 10 turned into 30. They ended up with 8 missed tackles on defense, which is not bad at all given the amount of opportunities, but 7 of them were what PFF calls coverage missed tackles, meaning they happened after a guy caught the ball. So, you know, if it's a running play and you miss the tackle, maybe that's like a defensive lineman missing an arm tackle at the line of scrimmage, and then he gets hit by a linebacker 3 yards down the field. No big deal. Missed tackles and coverage, that guy breaks a cornerback's tackle 20 yards downfield, and next thing you know, he's 40 yards downfield. So it was a big problem, and I don't see a way it's going to get better given that West Virginia has one starter out with injury, most likely. Another potential starter suspended for the first half because of a targeting call.
Yeah.
And just a lot of youth back there.
Oof. We'll have to get into the defense here in a second, but I want to build off what you said with JT Daniels. Cause I think from a KU fan's perspective, like you look at the roster and you see the name and the stars and the accolades, at least kind of before college there. And you're very curious by that because like you said, West Virginia outside of Will Grier recently, not great. Like Daigie last year, not great. And for you, like with what the offense does, and for folks that didn't watch, right, JT Daniels, 23 of 40, 214 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. If the 6 drops don't happen, all of a sudden you're looking at 29 of 40, and that's a much better clip for a quarterback. So what exactly is like West Virginia trying to do with JT Daniels and the offense that they're trying to run? Like what exactly should KU fans expect from the offense and how they want JT Daniels to operate?
Well, that was the first game with new offensive coordinator Graham Harrell, and I'm withholding judgment on what the offense is truly going to look like because I feel like given Pitt's defensive line and the pressure that was being put on Daigie, West Virginia's passing offense was screen pass, screen pass, screen pass, or a 3-step deep fade. You know, not some long developing play for some deep pass or some mesh concept that's crossing across the whole field where you need 4 or 5 seconds before you can throw. It was just go routes, 2-3-step drop, chuck it. And, you know, that's kind of what the offense was. I think it'll develop more when West Virginia plays teams that don't have the defensive line that Pitt does. And that's why I'm reserving judgment on what this offense will truly end up being.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'll be interested to see what they do against Kansas, because I think if you look at Kansas and at least the first week against Tennessee Tech, the front 7's kind of what stood out for KU, and you're kind of still wondering about the defensive backfield. And I'll be interested to see how West Virginia attacks that. But I want to go to the run game too, because CJ Donaldson, the story here is fascinating to me, right? Kind of rated and recruited as a tight end, or correct me if I'm wrong, maybe he wasn't recruited as a tight end, but viewed in the recruiting industry as a tight end, comes in 7 carries, 125 yards, 17.9 yards per carry and a touchdown. Did you expect this from him? And I guess in terms of the run game, how much are they going to rely on that? Do you expect kind of going forward?
I'll start with that last part there. I think Neil Brown touched on that today, probably 10 to 15 touches in total throughout the game. I think maybe they don't want to anoint him you know, this the starter even at running back or the workhorse and start giving 20, 25 carries. Nothing like that. Mm-hmm. Coming out of high school, yeah, it was, I guess you could call him a tight end. West Virginia liked to call their tight end room the SUV room, like, you know, a sport utility vehicle, because they came in all different size and types. Some guys were used as your traditional tight end. Some were used as an H-back, some on inline, some like a inside receiver, an H receiver is what they call it at West Virginia. And Donaldson kind of fit more that role, the H receiver, because that's kind of what he played in high school. And then they were trying to find different ways to get in the ball. And I think Sean Reagan, the tight ends coach, said he didn't even get two or three practices with him before they moved him to running back. And he's just such a big guy with, you know, good acceleration. And he, as Neil Brown said today, he just makes up his mind and goes. And that's all he did against Pitt. Like, I don't want to take anything away from his performance, but the offensive line in the run game was very good. And they just kind of cleared a path. They ran some zone scheme. I think he was the only running back that had a little bit of gap scheme going. But West Virginia gave him a little hole, and he just ran north-south. And it was kind of as simple as that, especially when you're 240 pounds and someone's trying to arm tackle you. So I'm interested to see where it develops from here, because he was, again, he was known as a pass catcher and didn't get a single pass thrown his way. So how is that going to develop with this offense moving forward?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's fascinating. And I want to go to the offensive line now, because that's when you've mentioned watching the game. That's hard to tell. Is it a result of Pitt's defensive line being incredible and that group being obviously, you know, probably their biggest strength on defense, or was the West Virginia offensive line that bad? Like, what's your read? Like, going into the season, did you think the offensive line was going to be an issue? And 1 week in, I guess, what are some of the worrisome positions along the offensive line that you have?
So West Virginia returned all five starters from last season, except last season they weren't very good. So is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? You don't really know. They made one change, moving Wyatt Milam from right tackle to left tackle. He had a little bit of a rough day there. He was excellent last year as a true freshman at right tackle. And then they moved one starter off the starting line. He was probably the biggest culprit last year for allowing pressures. And then, of course, I think it was in the first half, maybe the second quarter, starting right guard Jordan White got hurt. So then they're shuffling guys around, because the guy they had at right guard was moved to right tackle. Now he's moved back to right guard. They're bringing somebody else in. So I think there was a little bit of trying to gel, especially on that right-hand side of the line. Mm-hmm. Which led to some issues. I think they got to figure out that right tackle, because Doug Nestor, who started at right guard last year, they had planned, according to my sources, and coaches kind of confirmed it last offseason, planning on putting Nestor at right tackle last year, but then he broke his hand and had a huge club on that outside hand. So they kept him on the inside and did a little team thing on the right tackle, two guys rotating around before Milam took over. This year, they finally decided Nestor's going to right tackle, but then that opens up questions at right guard. So I don't think they have five is the problem. I think maybe they have four, but I don't think they have five. And it's going to open up a spot for the defensive line somewhere.
Gotcha. And for the health, for this week at least, did Neil Brown say much about his status going into this week?
So for Jordan White, he said he was a probable, a maybe. He kind of, as far as injuries as a whole, again, we'll get the defense with Charles Woods, but Jordan White was the only other person who played that got hurt during the game. And he said he was a maybe. I'm told that he's been out at practice, but not full contact. So we'll see how it goes.
Gotcha. All right. That's a perfect segue there. Let's go to defense. Because when I was doing some preseason research, I saw that Dante Stills is still on the roster. It's the equivalent of, you know, everyone makes fun of KU for, you know, Perry Ellis or Mitch Lightfoot. Yeah. Like, this is the equivalent of that. Because I remember in, like, 2020 writing some preview on West Virginia and writing about Dante Stills, like, being the guy.
Yeah.
And here we are in 2022, three seasons later, and he's still there. Obviously, KU fans will know him along the defensive line. But that group as a whole, it looks pretty impressive to me. Is that the biggest strength of West Virginia's defense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this might be the best defensive line for West Virginia since 2010. And that 2010 team had three NFLers, three NFL draft picks, actually, and held teams like 12 points a game. Granted, that was the old Big East, not the Big 12, but still. You got Dante Stills, who, again, you mentioned, all Big 12, freshman All-American back 4 years ago. And then you move over, you got Taj Alston, who's a multi-year starter on the other end. Jordan Jefferson, who started some games in the middle last year. He's more of a true nose type. They go to Edward Vesterinen, who got some play last year before he got hurt. He's back in there, especially when they give some four-man front looks. Sean Martin is a guy that had a sack against Pitt, and he was a highly regarded recruit, top player out of West Virginia a couple seasons ago. So he's somebody to know. And I think, you know, every defensive line coach says, I want nine, I want 10, you know, guys rotating in. You're like, yeah, sure, whatever. They had six for sure, because you add in Mike Lockhart, who was a starter at Georgia Tech and transferred in, and a couple guys were injured. So you could absolutely see West Virginia roll when they're healthy, if they're healthy, because there's a couple maybes, seven or eight guys on that defensive line right now.
Wow. Does that stem to the linebackers in the front seven? And the reason I'm focusing on this is because for me and KU's identity, it's going to be a lot of running the football. And they want to be physical. They want to try and control the clock so they can stay in these games. So obviously defensive line is a strength. Linebacker, is that also a strength, or is that kind of pushing it towards the weakness in the secondary?
I think it's up in the air. It's got some strength. Like, the speed is as good as it's been in a couple years. Now, Neil Brown talked about some alignment issues, some gap integrity kind of issues, guys staying in their lanes, knowing where they're supposed to go. You look at a guy like Lee Koba, who's now the starting Mike linebacker. He was a guy who made early contributions at Syracuse before bouncing back through junior college, ending up at West Virginia. Just a ton of speed, big physical specimen. And I think he led the team in tackles, but he also led the team in missed tackles because he's just there all the time. But he's not always in the right position, if that makes sense. Like, he's getting to where the ball is, but not squared up or whatever it is. But between he and Lance Dixon, former Penn State linebacker, you got a lot of speed there. The other linebacker spot, again, is a bandit. It's more of a edge rushing type. Jared Bartlett had a sack and a half maybe in the Pitt game. We've seen games where he's been great. Last year against Virginia Tech, he had three sacks and another couple pressures. And then he didn't have another sack for the rest of the year. So hit or miss on that spot. And I think it's kind of how you feel about all three spots at linebacker for West Virginia.
And let's move back to the secondary, obviously, because that's what you mentioned off the top being a weakness. Yeah. Obviously, tackling is a thing, and I'm sure KU will try and get to that with the outside zone stuff. In terms of, like, the actual just coverage, is it man, zone? When I think of KU's wide receivers, I don't necessarily know if they're the type of guys that can go shake off really good man coverage. So what type of coverage should KU fans expect to see?
I think you're going to see more zone there was some talk in fall camp of, hey, we try out some man. We like this idea of man. We have the bodies. We have the speed and the length for some man. And I don't think it hit against Pitt. You know, I don't have the exact splits of what they ran against Pitt, but you certainly saw some man coverage out there and a couple of the big plays for Pitt and a couple of plays that could have been big that they missed were man coverage. So I think maybe you saw them play with fire a little bit there and they'll draw it back in and stick with a little more zone.
And going big picture now, first quarter, what are you looking for to make you feel like, all right, West Virginia on the right foot, this is a game they should kind of cruise to or win? What's kind of the thing that you'll be looking for early in the game to make you feel comfortable about the way that the game's trending for West Virginia?
Defense, I want to see what the secondary can do tackling. Again, coverage, I think they'll figure it out, or you can put enough guys back there to make it difficult on Daniels. But the tackling is something that they just have to figure it out. And Neil Brown said he felt it was mostly fundamentals was the issue, which might concern me even more than anything else, because these guys are junior, you know, these are transfers. These are juniors and seniors, and they're having issues with fundamentals tackling. It's not great. On the offensive side, this is going to sound oddly specific, but I'm going to be staring at Bryce Ford Wheaton. He was having an all-time great game. 9 catches, 97 yards, 2 touchdowns. Both touchdowns were 50-50 balls where he just beat his man. He had a play earlier where Daniels got hit while he was throwing. Ball went straight up in the air, easy interception, and the Pitt defender was letting it come down, and Bryce Ford Wheaton sprinted about 15 yards and jumped up in the air like a basketball player and saved that drive. And then he was the guy who was wide open in the fourth quarter. JT Daniels threw the ball to his hands. It bounced right through his hands, right to a Pitt defender that got returned for a pick six. Can he shake that off? Because, again, you throw it, it was obviously the most important play of the game, so you can't just forget about it. But how do you bounce back from that? Because he was amazing outside of that. And I just, if he's the leading receiver on the team, and if he can't shake that, that's going to affect the whole offense.
That's a good point, because he was awesome. He was awesome. So much fun to watch. And the basketball team, I think Lewis Riddick said it, but like, yeah, those guys look like basketball players. So that'll be a fascinating matchup.
He's what they call, I mean, you see him in person and you know that saying that he's an Adonis. You just look at him, you're like, oh my God, look at that guy.
I'm fascinated because KU's corners are not that. They don't look like that. So that'd be interesting for me to see, but let's go here before I let you go, Chris. I think the spread, sports gambling is legal in Kansas now.
Same in West Virginia. So
there you go. All right. So let's get some spread talk here. I think it opened at like 13. I've seen it as high as 16. I mean, I'm not going to ask you to pick a winner. I feel like that's, you know, more self-explanatory considering the spread, but who'd you take? 14. Let's say it's 14 even. Where'd you go?
Can I chicken out and say push? No.
All right.
I don't know. I think 14's high. I mean, Kansas gave West Virginia trouble last year. I think West Virginia's still working out some kinks right now. So, you get into double figures. There aren't many Big 12 on Big 12 matchups that I like in double figures. Now, the fact that this is in West Virginia, maybe, because I think I know what Vegas is doing. I think they know that, you know, or they're wondering, is Kansas as good as they looked beating up on Tennessee Tech? Is West Virginia as bad as a team that lost when they lost on the road by a fluke play to a top 20 team? Who knows? If you ask me 14, I might go Kansas. It's so many points.
Yeah. I'm on the same page. I think it's just a lot. And I think the way this game plays out, it's just going to be a lot of running, which obviously lends itself to the under, but also, you know, it being more of a close game. But awesome, Chris. Great stuff overall. Where can KU fans find you this week if they want to read some more West Virginia stuff?
You can find us over at earsports.com. That's E-E-R CMRSports.com. You can find me on Twitter at CMAnderson247.
Awesome. Thanks a bunch, Chris, for coming on. Always appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island, you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.